Z's going to lose to Robin Calcutt, and Levy's going to lose to Steve Johnson in the fall. And this is 100% because Levy and Holmes conspired with the swamp to try to destroy me because I'm an effective reformer who they can't control. And you know, anyway, so I want to start off. There was a very important thing that happened at the school board meeting Monday.
And let me just jump in real fast for the edification of our audience. You're referring to Board Chairman Robert Levy.
Yeah.
Just so we have the names out there. And you also mentioned Philip.
Board member Philip Holmes.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so, and I'll tie this in because the first thing we're going to talk about is today, and this was something very important that happened in Monday's meeting, was everyone's familiar with the bond forfeiture issue with the that happened when Clerk Todd Maness first got elected. And, you know, there were turnover issues in his office. You know, I'll let Todd come on the radio and explain what happened. It was horrible what they did to him. But anyway, certain reports didn't get filed. And, you know, bond forfeitures per the North Carolina Constitution, all forfeitures and fines go to the local school district where, you know, the fines are imposed. So if someone skips bail, you know, that money, if it's ultimately forfeited, comes to Moore County Schools. So what happened was there was a turnover and, you know, the ball got dropped for a certain period of time. But make no mistake about it, what happened was the swamp, the uniparty swamp, which is made up of Democrats and Republicans, and I'll be more than happy to define what, you know, the swamp is, but, you know, maybe I don't have to do it now. But anyway, they used this opportunity to try, the same people who went after me, not because I was abandoning the party platform, but exactly because I was effective. You got to keep in mind, the swamp controlled three centers of gravity in Moore County. Historically, the swamp controlled the Moore County School Board and $100 million a year in funding. The swamp controlled the Sand Hills Community College Board of Trustees. And how much do they spend a year? You're on the board.
How much do they spend a year?
Yeah, Sand Hills Community College. What's their annual budget?
About $38 million, something like that.
Okay, and Moore County Schools up to $166 million. So you got to think back. 5 years ago, the swamp controlled Moore County School spending, $100 million, second largest employer in the county. They controlled the Sand Hills Community College Board, and they controlled the court system. And that's very important. So what happened was 4 years ago, the people of Moore County stood up and said, we're taking back our school system, and we put reformers on, you know, you guys, we all worked together and got reformers on the board, and we set about making effective reforms. And so the swamp lost one third of their center of gravity. Then the Sand Hills Community College Board, we got two effective reformers put on there. You know, historically, those were just political appointments. You know, if you help raise money for the bond, or if you were like a golden child, you got put on the board and you were expected not to do anything but attend cocktail parties while they were implementing all this wasteful spending and DEI and naming buildings. I mean, my God, everything. There's more stuff named after George Little in Moore County than West Virginia has named after Senator Byrd. We got a bridge now. Did you know that?
I attended the ceremony.
Yeah, that's because the leadership of the GOP sent a request. We need to, Beto and the boys sent a request. I mean, all the things they could do, they sent a request to have a bridge named after George Little. But anyway, so they lost that center of gravity because, oh my God, we got two effective, we got two reformers, yourself and Beth Ann Pratt, put on the Sand Hills Community College Board. We didn't do that. I mean, you know, the county, it was 12-0. I mean, not a single person voted for Tom Beto. Anyway, and Todd Maness, you know, there was, some other things that happened in the courthouse, and Maness got elected. So all of a sudden, the swamp found themselves losing all three of their centers of gravity. So the first thing they did is they went after Hensley. And then the second thing they did, they thought they destroyed me, but I wasn't going anywhere. I was elected by the people. I'm doing the people's work, and I'm still doing the people's work. then they went after Todd Maness, and they used this bond forfeiture thing to as a tool to go after him. This was 100% a political hit job. They also filed frivolous lawsuits against and made frivolous charges against Todd Maness, which went down in flames. 100% went. That was 100%. The frivolous lawsuit and whatnot was a political hit job, and then they used this bond thing, bond forfeiture, to try to take out Todd, and he stopped him cold, man. He punched him right in the face and then curb stomped them, and make no mistake about it, had they effectively eliminated Todd, they would have gone after you, they would have gone after the other conservatives they can't control, because one thing the swamp cannot have, they cannot have effective reformers as elected officials or on board positions that they cannot control.
And that's an excellent point, and it is a slog to try to, you know, direct the attention of these bodies to the fiscal stewardship that they are appointed to deliver. Yeah. And I will add, it's important to note in the case of Sand Hills Community College, another big turning point there has been the arrival of our new president, Sandy Stewart,
100%.
Who I am very confident in is going to make many important overdue changes very quickly.
Well, there's a couple other people on the board who time out this year and next year, so I look forward to more reformers. But anyway, back to the original topic. So that's setting the stage. This was a political hit job, and it was amplified intentionally to do maximum damage to Todd. And here's the scoop. Everybody threw out this number, and by the way, I couldn't talk about this because it was a legal matter, and I cannot discuss legal matters that in closed session. Now, everyone else on the board leaked it. There are all kinds of anonymous board sources leaked, and you'll notice that the leaks coming out of the school board on closed session topics were intentionally designed to do maximum damage to Todd Maness. You know, they were leaking. School board members cited by the pilot were not their names, just anonymous school board. I got to believe the reporter. If he says he has an anonymous source, he probably does. But those were intentionally leaked to do maximum damage, $400,000, $300,000. Well, let me tell everyone, despite what you read in the pilot, despite of what you heard legal experts quoted in the pilot, in spite of what you read on the editorial pages of the pilot, the amount of damages, and I can talk about this now because it's been settled, there's no non-disclosure, and it's all public record. Story in the pilot right there about it this morning. Anyway, the number was never 300,000. The number was never 400,000. Everybody on the school board knew this. Or should have known it because, we talked about it, and I figured it out within 5 minutes of when this was first briefed to us 6 months ago.
Yeah, just to be clear, the number that they were batting around was that $400,000 in forfeited bond revenue was being denied the school system.
Right, and that's not true.
Negligence.
Right, and that's not true, and this is how the editorial board, I'm not talking about the reporter, I'm talking about the editorial board of the pilot. This is how they use exaggeration and false facts to mislead people. Here's the scoop, is during a certain period of time, it was 4 or 5 months, certain reports weren't filed, to the people who gave the bondsman. So there were $275,000 of bond note forfeiture notifications that didn't happen. So we'll call that at-risk bonds, that there were $275,000 of at-risk bonds that was the number. But that's not the amount that the school board gets. There are 9 reasons why bail bondsmen get their money back. And among those reasons is, if a person doesn't show up at court, their bond's forfeited. It's at risk. And that total amount was $275,000. But if the person's incarcerated somewhere else, the bondsman gets their money back. If the person's in the hospital, the bondsman gets their money back. If the person dies, the bondsman gets their money back. If the charges are dropped, the bondsman get their money back. I just cited 4. There's actually 9, right? There's 9 reasons why that bond will go back to the bondsman and not be forfeited forfeited to Moore County schools. So what you actually have to look at when you calculate the damages to Moore County schools is, of that $270,000, $275,000 of at-risk bonds, what's the historic amount, percentage that's forfeited? The answer to that is 8%.
Right.
So let's just make it 10%. Let's just round it up a bit. And historically speaking, out of $275,000 worth of bonds at risk, by the time you subtract out the people who were dead, incarcerated, hospitalized, you know, charges drop, it's 8%.
Right.
So the, historically speaking, the number of the damages was actually $25,000. So what happened was, you know, they knew what these bonds were. They knew who the people were. The Office of Administrative Courts, by the way, Moore County Schools was never, ever at risk of not being made whole, because the Office of Administrative Courts in Raleigh is required to have bonds to cover school boards in case that something like this happens. So Moore County Schools was never at risk of not getting this money, regardless of what you read on the editorial page of the Pilot or legal scholars were saying. They were all wrong. So the Office of Administrative Courts took every single case, ran it through, applied that test, and it came out to $30,500.
Right.
Was the actual damages if it had played out. So what we ended up settling for was the $30,500, which is what we would have got, plus $4,500 in attorney fees. And by the way, our attorney's fees were not, I find it hard, I suspect we made money on our attorney fees. So Moore County Schools was made whole.
Yeah.
Moore County Schools was never at risk of getting this money, regardless of the amount.
Right.
But you have to ask yourself, why was the pilot, and why were members of the community, and why were certain school board members continuing to leak and spread this false information of $300,000 and $400,000 when they knew for a fact that it was never $300,000 or $400,000?
Right. All the while placing Todd Maness's character, you know, under the spotlight, and trying to assassinate his character, a man who has been a law enforcement servant in this community, who was duly elected as clerk of courts, who is as fine a person as you would want to meet, and you know, he has now been vindicated.
Yeah. Well. So. Look, the truth always wins out. Sometimes it takes longer than others. Hopefully, the truth always wins out. And again, make no mistake about it, the same uniparty swamp that tried to take me out, they went after Todd Maness because he is a clerk of court that they cannot control. He's not breaking the laws. He's not giving preferential treatment. So they tried to take him out, and he failed. And they failed. And not only did they failed with me, and they failed miserably with Todd, because he just kicked him right in the family jewels. And like I said, had they been successful going after Todd, then, you know, you or Beth Ann or, you know, Commissioner Von Cannon or someone else who's actually an independent representative of the people would have been their next target.
Yep.
So that's what happened there.
Well, that just leads us to the next important topic, which is transparency, really. And you know, as Republicans and conservatives, we are champions of transparency, but it doesn't seem that we always, you know, walk that walk.
So, you know, it's interesting because I knew something was up. You know, Sunday I started getting taunting texts from Philip Holmes. You know, we're going to, you know, oh, just wait until Monday, this and that. I'm like, oh, I wonder what they have in store for Monday. And so, you know, I show up and, you know, I prepare. So they try to pass these two policies. Did you see these policies?
Yes.
Yeah, so they tried to pass a policy. They passed one, and they didn't pass the other. But two of the policies, and these were policies that Levy and Davis came up with. I mean, they're on that. Levy's chair of the committee, or Davis, maybe the committee changed. But anyway, Levy and Davis came up with these policies.
The vice chair, Shannon Davis, you're referring to?
Yes. Yes, and the first policy we'll talk about was, and both of them were just 100% to keep me from exposing their malfeasance and to shut up dissenting opinions. And one policy, not only do they not want dissenting opinions, but now they want to tell you when and how you can have dissenting opinions. The first policy, and by the way, the Daily Haymaker, Brandt, you know, I've met three or four times. He did an article on this last night. I woke up this morning and saw it after several people sent it to me. And you should read the Daily Haymaker story on this, because he pretty much got this right. But they tried to pass a policy. The first policy they did was before a school, and I'm going to read this part real quick, before a substantial presentation is made by an individual member of the board on any matter of proposed business, on any topic, it must first be presented by the superintendent. The superintendent will then review, provide comments and feedback. Okay, along with administrative recommendations. So first of all, that's just the first part of it, of the policy. So first of all, they want to take away the right of every school board member to present something without it being presented to the and vetted through the superintendent.
Right, which is the reverse of how it should be.
Correct.
And that's not what we vote for. We don't vote to have an overlord superintendent. We vote to have a superintendent who follows the direction of the board.
Yeah, so some questions that I had just on this portion. Well, I pointed out that just right before we brought this up, Pauline Bruno, who I love dearly, right? She had a point of personal privilege, and she pulled out newspaper articles and talked about that and talked about all this stuff. None of that was presented and vetted. So I said, well, right here, Pauline wouldn't have been able to give that. And Mr. Chair, you just gave her the point of personal privilege, but now you're trying to shut that down in this policy. I also pointed out that during the last work session, the superintendent passed out papers to the school board members that they were expected to discuss that day that had never been disclosed before. So is this rule going to apply to the superintendent or not? So, and then, oh, by the way, is there a lead time? Is it 5 minutes or 5 days? Do I have to now get everything I'm going to say at a school board meeting submitted 5 days in advance? So if I think of something, I wake up that morning and have an epiphany, I can't share that. This is 100% to shut down any dissenting opinion. And folks, this is not what we voted for. As I said in closed session, Libby Carter would have never thought of doing this. Pam Thompson certainly wouldn't have done this.
The former board chairs, Carter and
right,
Thompson.
Right. Yes. So this
Democrats.
Is the tyranny. This is the tyranny of the majority trying to shut up, you know, a dissenting opinion. But then it gets even better, because then the policy continues. Thereafter, it will be referred to the appropriate committee for review before it will be considered for placement on the board agenda unless a majority of the board. So Levy wants to give himself the unilateral power before anything can be presented to the board, anything, that he will refer it to a committee. He will bury it in committee. And then if it makes it out of committee, then and only then will your dissenting thoughts and opinions be shared with the public.
And that would lead to a proliferation of rubber stamping during school board meetings.
It's 100%. And ironic. Look, we hate it when Nancy Pelosi refers stuff to committee to get rid of it. We hated it. The school board was talking about this earlier that evening about how the calendar bill was passed overwhelmingly by the House. It went to the Senate, and Senator Berger buried it in committee, and the board members were abhorred by that, and how could he use that trick? But that's the exact trick that Levy tried to put in policy Monday night, was his ability to bury any dissenting opinion in a committee, which is, by the way, what he did with my SRO, reform of SRO, and trauma medical. That was buried in committee back in March and April. Has never seen the light of day since then.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right.
So anyway, so that was one policy. The other policy, there's other stuff too. I mean, we, you know, ran out of time. We're going to run out of time. But the other policy is, and boy, this is, so they passed a policy that says no board member, administrator, or staff person shall photograph or record a closed session.
Right.
Okay, so first of all, full disclosure, under the previous school board, I asked the board attorney, this was when Pam Thompson was chair, I said, hey, is there anything to prevent board members from recording meetings, and they said no. And I said, okay, and I started recording them. And I started recording them for very good reasons that I'll go into in a minute. But they, so perfectly legal, perfectly okay. Well, the reason why all of a sudden they don't want board closed session, and by the way, I've never leaked anything. Not a single thing has come out. But the reason why this board doesn't want board sessions recorded is to cover up shady stuff. And I use this word in the board meeting that they've done in closed session. There's been racial comments made in closed session. There's been board members who've illegally plotted against MCS employees based solely upon their political views. The chair even made false illegal allegations against me in closed session, which is illegal. So I recorded this because at some point there's going to be a lawsuit, and it comes down to he said, she said, and it's to protect myself and to protect the public. So
the public, especially, yes.
If there's a lawsuit, there's an accurate recording, because I have asked for specific thing. The minutes of the closed sessions are not accurate reflections of what's happened in closed sessions. There are specific things that I've asked to be included in the minutes of the meeting, and they refuse to include them in the minutes of the meeting. Now, it doesn't help that, you know, the board attorney doesn't do the minutes of the closed sessions for until 5 or 6 months after the closed session. Those should be done the very next closed session. They should be reviewed and passed like they were under previous school boards.
ASAP, absolutely.
So they passed that, and they don't want and here's why they don't want photo. What could happen? What's the harm in photographing a closed session?
Maybe the consumption of free food.
Right. Remember when the board passed that we had a motion to ensure elementary teachers had duty free lunch periods, just duty free, like 30 minutes where they could eat their lunch in peace, where they had no duty. You know, like any responsible employee would do for any of their employees.
Lunch break.
Right. The school board voted that down 5-2. Holmes and I voted for a duty-free lunch break. Well, the fact of the matter is the board goes back there in closed session, and not only do they have a duty-free lunch break, but they eat at taxpayer expense. And I'm going to be posting these photos I've taken over the last 6 or 8 months. I've taken photos of those tax-paid lunches in closed session, and that just irritates them. They're back there. Look, we ran on reducing wasteful spending. $90,000 a year is spent on school board members, and you know, we could hire a teacher for that. We could hire
easily.
An IEP
yes.
coordinator, and part of that is those free lunches and free dinners they give board members.
Plenty of food for thought.
Anyway, thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. You finally came up for air, but then there's no time left to talk. So it goes for this, Wednesday. Have yourself a great, safe day. We'll see you back bright and early tomorrow, 7 to 9, for a Thumpin' Thursday. Until then, support the local businesses you hear on WEEB, because they're the core of our economy here in Moore County. When they do well, we all do well. Give them first crack at your spending dollars, and the money will roll over, create more jobs for everybody. And don't forget also that if you'd like to be a part of the progressive advertising group that advertises with Talk Radio, well, come do it and you'll find out how effective it is. It's number one form of marketing. All right, that's it for me, the leader man, and Nick and Colt the dog.
Back.
We'll see you at the dog park.
Laughing.
So,